Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and with me is co-host Marvin Smith. Marvin, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great, Alan. How about yourself?
I have had a wonderful weekend. It's been it's been a great morning as well. But one of my questions, because I know you had some stuff going on this weekend, tell me about your weekend.
My weekend, Alan, it was, sunny Southern California. It wasn't too sunny. But you know what? When your heart is in the right place and you're excited about life, it's always sunny.
Absolutely.
So that being said, I was hanging out. I was working on a film. I was working on this featured film associated with the NFL. And so I had this film crew following me all for the whole weekend. So I was going through this whole production. Very extensive, but it's really interesting. I mean, this film is going to be, it's called Heartfelt. Mm-hmm. And they're basically following, they are interviewing individuals all over the world. And I'm kind of, through my association with the NFL players. And so I was, and what they're actually looking at are individuals, we're talking about healthy living. Mm-hmm. And they're looking at individuals who have had issues with, elevated blood pressure, mm-hmm. Cholesterol, and, part of that, I go through this very extensive screening through the NFL, about $20,000 worth of work every year to make sure, I'm still functioning properly. And, I'm the only one that they interviewed that hasn't had a heart attack, right? So, but the thing was just really unique. And the producer, she's an Academy Award winning producer, so it was really, really great. And, it's not all time that I think that you and I get a chance to hang out. But then again, I was trying to connect with you because of our affiliation. And, you were nowhere to be found. I kept calling you. I'm like, Alan, where are you? But then again, what were you doing?
Well, and the reason that I couldn't respond, and yes, once I did get within cell range, I did see that you'd left some messages. I was also on the set, but we were shooting out in Santa Clarita in the middle of nowhere, and we had no cell service.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So, but it was a great, a great weekend, a great time. We shot some really good stuff, and I'm very proud of it.
Well, it's hard for me to keep up with you these days. I guess, as you say, the same thing about me, but that's why it's great when we have a chance to come into the studio. But now this is probably your fourth film you're working on?
In a little over a year.
A little over a year. Okay. And can you expound? Could you share a little? I mean, I know you're the secretive type of guy.
No, I mean, they're action thrillers. So, okay. It's the type of thing that, I'm proud of much of what it is that we're doing, but at the same time, it's not necessarily exactly what we want to be doing. But, but it's good work. And,
okay.
And I'm learning a lot about the industry, and the future will be that we will be able to put out the type of content that we want to be able to make a positive difference. And that's what it's all about.
Well, it's interesting. I just had this, I'm thinking out loud right now, Alan, so don't hold me accountable. But I'm thinking out loud. And, I've been knowing you for over 30 years, and you don't look a bit over 30. Minus the gray hair and the beard and all that kind of stuff. You're very youthful looking, and which is good. But I have this thought. Why don't we, we've always been talking about film. One day we need to do something. I mean, we've been involved with troubled teens and the work that we do because we do it from our heart. One of these days we need to really sit down and collect, think about how do we do a featured film and shine some positive light on this industry, because it's something that I think it's heartfelt. And there's a lot of people that don't understand and don't know. We should do that one day.
Well, I have the script for it.
Okay.
So the script is already there. But what I'm learning is that you need to make the movies that Hollywood knows are going to sell. Once you've made those, they see that they can sell. They see that you know what you're doing. Then they give you the type of budget you need to make something that makes a positive difference. So we will get there. It is just a matter of time.
Well, I'm still thinking out loud. Our guest today, which we will get to in just a minute, I'm excited. He's has this new book that's coming out. And it's in the same vein of what we do. I think one day we need to probably sit down with, I'm not going to drop his name yet, and talk to him about, you know, this film idea. I think it would be great, you know?
Well, exactly, because, you know, what we're talking about is healthy living. And yes. One of the best ways to have healthy living is to be healthy parents. If we're healthy parents, mentally and physically, we're going to project that onto our children. And, you know, that's one of the things that I like. That's one of the things that I like about Brad and about the program that he's co-founded. So why don't we tell our listeners a little bit about our guest and
okay.
And the things that they're doing.
Excited.
So,
here we go, Alan. I mean, each week, got to remember now, each week, this show will bring you guests that will what? Inspire you, educate you, and in some cases, outright entertain you, while bringing answers and options to raising children today in our constantly changing future.
That's right. And we address issues such as locating runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, and dealing with addictions, and so much more.
You know, with both of us, I said both, not one. This is a two-man show. Having over 30 years of experience working with families in crisis, we've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields, and authors sharing valuable stories and helpful information who are working to keep your family and mine and our listeners mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. That sounds like healthy. That sounds like trying to keep our families healthy holistically.
That's right.
I think our guest, that's Brad, we're talking about healthy families, right?
That's right.
Okay.
You got it. And we'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family.
Answers for the Family.
You got it.
Do you have any answers?
Hey, that's what our guest is here
okay.
for.
Okay, gotcha.
All right.
Okay.
So, as co-founder and co-owner of Second Nature Wilderness Programs, our guest today, Brad Reedy, has helped to establish Second Nature as a leader in the treatment field. Brad has served as a primary therapist, executive director, and director of clinical services. He has served on the board of the Utah Department of Child and Family Services and the board of the National Association of Therapeutic Schools and Programs. Brad is an experienced public speaker and has been invited to deliver several keynote addresses on wilderness therapy, addiction treatment, and parenting at universities and conferences. Brad has broadcast over 650 live webinars on parenting since 2007. He is the author of the much-anticipated book, The Journey of the Heroic Parent, Your Child's Struggle and the Road Home. Brad, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thanks a lot. I'm really, really, really happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
Well, we are happy to have you here. You know, I've had a chance to take a little bit of a sneak peek at some of the excerpts from your book, and can't wait to get it.
Looking forward to it. Thanks.
Hey, Brad, you have to excuse me at times. You know, I'm this former NFL guy. You know what they say about NFL guys? We have brain damage. So if I get a little besides myself, just say, hey, Marvin, I think something is, I don't know if it's that ADA kicking in, but hey, calm down, buddy. Calm down.
Oh, you're doing great.
Yeah. So, Brad, now, obviously, I've known you within the industry. I've known of the good works that you and Second Nature have done. So why at this time did you decide to write the book?
You know, I've been broadcasting, like you said, webinars for the past 7 or 8 years, and a lot of people have asked me, you know, can you write some of this down? We can see the webinars, but you have something to say. And I think, like a lot of people, I didn't think I had anything to say, but I started to ask myself, what do I have to say that might be different? What can I say that hasn't been said? And as I thought about it for a few weeks, I came to realize, really what I do is I teach parents how to think. And I think that's a different than giving them advice or telling them how to approach their child or giving them an exact philosophy, but rather finding a way to teach them to find their own truth, to find their own philosophy, and to find out why they don't know what they need to know in raising their children. So then I embarked on the process, and it's taken quite some time to write a book that would take families through a process. You know, I'm not an expert on their lives, but I am an expert at providing them some tools so that they can begin to discover
right.
their own truth and their own wisdom that's buried beneath shame and fear and guilt and other things like that. So I wanted to teach parents how to think and find an enduring source of truth, which is themselves.
Wow, that's great, Brad. That's great. It reminds me of the work that I was doing this weekend with the film crew, and it was talking about healthy lifestyles. And, you know, one of the things that came out, you know, through this process, and the film is going to be called Heartfelt, is how men all over the world, how we it's almost like we're the guilt and the shame when we feel that we've encountered something like high elevated cholesterol or, you know, hypertension. And it's almost like we don't want to talk about it. But you know what? It's that communication. It's that let the cat off the bag that helps you to be healthy and not hide
right.
and hinder. Almost the same things you're saying. So on that note, then, what makes the book, as you are sharing, what's the uniqueness of the book?
You know, I think that a lot of parenting seminars, lectures, classes, therapy sessions begin with parents saying, what am I going to do with my child? I'm sure you guys have been asked that question thousands of times. What am I going to do?
We're going to take them to second nature.
That's a good, quick, simple answer that works most of the time, for sure. But when I was, you know, over the years, what I realized is, and it's hard not to get trapped into answering the question that you've been asked.
Right.
But what I realized from doing some of my own personal work is that wasn't the question. The question is not, what do I do? I was going through my own trials, and this is in the book, in 2010, and I was trying to figure out what to do in my life with my marriage and my career.
Uh-huh.
And throughout the course of my own personal work and workshop, I realized that the real question was, who am I?
Right.
And then from that foundation, then I can begin to face the choices that I have to make for myself. And they're not easy. They don't go, the fear doesn't go away, the anxiety doesn't go away, but I know what to do. And that's the message of my book, my own work, is to constantly point myself and others back to that question of, who am I? And then from there, boundaries, decisions,
yes.
Intentions clearly flow from that point when I get more clear about myself.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, Brad, as well, because, you know, I'm under the philosophy, or I'm under the assumption, I'm under the auspices, going back to my mother. She made this comment when I was growing up. You know, she asked me at a young age, what do you want to do when you grow up? And I told her, I said, I want to help people. I remember this at the age of 5. I said, I really want to help people. And she says, you know what, baby? You got to help yourself first. You got to know who you are before you can help others. Now, not really realizing how profound that was, it didn't even make sense then. But it's, you know, coming back to what you're saying, Brad, it's like you got to go through it to get to it.
Right.
There's no other way. You can't go over it. You can't go under it. And it's that journey through the process that is it's hard. And when it's emotional. It doesn't feel good. But it's being able to me, I look at that self-evaluation or self-analysis as we go through the process and can reflect, that gives us a better understanding of who we are as an individual. So I think that what you just shared is key.
Yeah, Brad, when you talk about dealing with the parent, I mean, what I hear you saying is that the parent first has to figure out not only who they are, but what type of parent they're going to be. And you talk a little bit about in the book about being a heroic parent. So share with us and share with our listeners what your definition of a heroic parent is.
You know, I borrowed the concept. It wasn't the title of the book to begin, but I borrowed the concept from Joseph Campbell about the hero's journey. And it's basically the idea of somebody who gives themselves to something bigger than themselves. And I can't think of anything bigger than oneself than raising children. And it's also this idea that I'm responsible for my life, that I take ownership for my life, and that I embrace the journey. Similar to Eastern philosophies of radical acceptance or Western philosophies of faith,
yes.
Where I am right now is not an accident, and I'm not off course. See, we imagine when our children are going through difficult things, we imagine that we're off course, and we want to get back on course. And if we don't embrace the journey, walk into it, lean into it, we're going to miss a lot of the gifts and treasures that the journey has to offer, a lot of the wisdom. And I
yes.
bet both of you could say this, all the listeners could say this, almost everything we've learned of value in our life came from mistakes, pain, heartache, difficulty, challenges. And so we have this idea of being a victim to it. And the opposite of being a hero is being a victim, to life, like it's happening to me, instead of saying, this is what it is. My child is struggling with addiction or with mental health issues. And so I have something to embrace here, something to learn, something to grow. And really, it fills you with a sense of empowerment and hope and optimism. And of course, in the end, more clarity and more wisdom than you had before you faced the challenge.
That is so true. And, you know, Brad, as I'm listening and I'm reflecting in the process, which is good. It's good to be able to reflect. And even as I'm listening to you, thinking about my own life and, you know, the goal is I want to be a better me. You know, I really do. I every day I get up, I want to be a better me. But every day I have these issues and things that are in front of me and they're there purposely when you embrace it to make you grow, to help you be that better person. Because without the adversities, you know, how do you grow? As an analogy, I think about physically, if you want to, you know, you want to get bigger, you go to the weight room, you do this exercise and you do it over a period of time. You start to have this type of physique and look that you go, wow, interesting. But it didn't happen without some work. It didn't happen with some, you know, continuously getting in and having a regimented program and then going through the process of that hard work. And it didn't feel good. But afterwards, the results, you go, wow, gee, that's amazing. And maybe you can expound more on this whole aspect of, you know, the victim role, because the victim role doesn't accept that process. It doesn't, it's woe is me, is what did I do wrong, is, you know, life is sucks, versus, you know what, I just went through that. That was good. And I think in Western society, for sure, we're not a society that looks at, you know, when there's an error, really sit down, reflect, dissect it, and grow from it. Learn. It's all about, okay, I'm by that now. I got to keep moving forward. But one thing I've learned, even in my own life, if you don't address it, if you don't face it, you come right around that. You come right back around that plateau or that circle and face it again. And until you overcome it, it's always in front of you.
Right. You know, I think a lot of what I see with parents, this is kind of a turning point in the book, is this idea that they come to me, to you, and they say, I'm scared, I'm worried, I'm angry, I'm frustrated because my child is doing X, Y, or Z. And really what they do is they surrender their own life over to their child, which sounds strange.
Yes.
Because we love our children. We'll do virtually anything for our children. But the basic request of a parent to me, or even of a spouse, if I would do couples therapy, to me, if you could change this other idiot over here, then I would be happy.
Get the nail on the head.
My problem is this guy. I'm scared. I'm upset. And it makes sense almost as a parent. Of course I'm scared she's doing drugs, or there's an eating disorder, or there's depression. But what we don't do is we don't make our serenity our project. We make it our child's project. Because it happened to us when we were young, too. We were told that if we did the right things and made our parents proud, then life would work out. And some of us have had to ask ourselves questions about what we've done in that process. And then we turn to our children and we say, I'm upset, I'm angry, I'm frustrated. Please change your behavior so daddy's not upset.
Uh-huh.
And one thing that Joseph Campbell said at his graduation ceremonies at Sarah Lawrence College to all of his graduates is he said, do not do what daddy and mommy want you to do, because their only idea for you is your safety. And if you don't take a risk and don't challenge yourself and don't move outside of your comfort zone, you're never going to experience the kind of growth, the kind of life that is waiting for you. So it's really about asking parents to be responsible for their serenity, you know, not sleeping at night, wringing their hands, being worried all the time. That there is feedback in that to the child, but that's not why. We don't want our children to do well so we're happy. We want our children to do well and be healthy because they'll be happy.
Right.
So we have to shift our language subtly from, I'm upset and scared, but this is about you having a healthy life, not about me being feeling good at night or sleeping well.
And I think as a parent, it's ideal that you just shared that. And correct me if I'm wrong, Brad and Alan, it's parents, because I'm a parent, I'm a grandparent as well, and Alan and yourself, Brad, we don't actually verbalize those words, I'm scared, I'm dealing with fear. It's what we act out and the things we say and cover up that, to me, becomes the mixed message.
Right. Yeah, we get loud. We get loud, we communicate it non-verbally, which is actually more confusing to our children and to others is we essentially say to them at an unconscious level, take care of me, make me feel okay. And
right.
because, in fact, the more clearly, the more transparently you communicate it, the easier it is for the child to deal with it. And they can say, oh, Dad's scared. Dad's upset. I see Dad. I hear Dad.
Right.
And there might be feedback in there for me, but that's not my mission in life is to make Dad sleep at night. My mission in life is to be the happiest, healthiest, most person full of love and meaning that I can.
Now, Brad, how does guidance and consequences, how do they fit into this role now when we're trying not to be a victim, when we're trying to make right. sure that they're making decisions to be the best possible person they can be? But at the same time, as parents, we still have a role.
Right. Yeah, that question often follows out of this concept of finding yourself and being your best self, and then parents say, well, you know, what, like you just said, what is my role? Where do limits, boundaries, and consequences come out from there? And my answer is, they come out more clear and intentional. They come out from a place of, see, if I can deal with my stuff, whatever that is, and if I can own it, you know, if I can make it my issue, my problem, my resolution, then what I'm going to be left with is seeing my child more clearly. And we know that about psychology, mm-hmm. that the more clearly we can see the edges of our own boundary, of our own psyche, of our own self, the more clearly that we can see everybody else. So then our boundaries become more intentional. They become more creative. They become about the child. And children often claim that what we're doing is about us anyway. And so when we can work on our stuff, because we'll never finish it,
right.
then what I can do is say, okay, here's what my child needs, and I can see him, I can see their problem more clearly, because it's not about me reducing anxiety or venting frustration or getting some kind of resolution inside myself, but it's about seeing what my child needs to deal with his or her problems, whatever those challenges are. So it flows from there. It gets more clear from there. It gets more intentional based on their needs and not ours.
That's good. That's good. You know, we have a, you know, periodically through the show, we'll get these text messages, we'll get emails, we'll get some call-in listeners, and love to address the audience questions because it's taking a scenario of a situation that's real to them at that moment. And, you know, I'm listening now, but how do I pair that into this situation? And so, Brad, I have a caller, a question here, and maybe you can, after I share it, you can, you know, give your input. It says, my friend's daughter is totally out of control. She has adopted this bullying tactic with her parents that has made it close to impossible for them to function normally. In and out of rehab and programs has just seemed to make her more skilled at pushing buttons and playing this game. She will be 18 in 3 months, and her mother is frightened at the future ahead. I am recommending she listens to the show today, and my question is, would your book provide her some guidance, or is it just too late?
If she's still breathing, it's not too late. There's no end to this until you don't wake up, and then you're done with this part of it. But, you know, the first thing that this mother, that I'd recommend to this mother, and yes, the book absolutely guides somebody like this through the process, because although this book, I think, has application to everybody in every relationship, you know, the thing that requires you or asks you to do some of this work is when your child is in crisis. So, you know, Joseph Campbell said, you know, it's a frightening dark forest to go into that we are asked to go into, and parents resist it until their child is in there, and then they'll go after it. So that's a prelude. My answer would be go to some Al-Anon meetings. Go to some CODA meetings. Commit to that. Get a sponsor. They can provide you peace and clarity, and as your child transitions from an adolescent or pre-adult to an adult, you need to get geared up to manage your life with her, because, again, placing responsibility on her shoulders for you being okay, for your family functioning, that's not going to help anybody in this process. So do your work. Get in your treatment. Get in. You look at your addiction, which is codependency, and I could talk
right.
about that for a while, but it's this idea of participating in a relationship with somebody who's self-destructive and participating in a relationship with their symptoms and their disorder that unconsciously and unintentionally exacerbates it. So you get to do your work, you do your work, and then you turn your child's life over to them, because I can't give you a step-by-step push the buttons and your child's going to change. Then I'm just fostering the same kind of thinking that I'm trying to steer you away from. What I can do is help you do your work, and then you improve the odds dramatically at having a powerful, positive impact on your child and on others.
That's good.
All right. Well, we're going to take a break. I want everybody to please stay with us. We are talking about the journey of the heroic parent, your child's struggle, and the road home. We are talking with Dr. Brad Reedy, and we will be right back. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking to Dr. Brad Reedy, and we're really talking about the heroic parent. What are the things that we can do to be that heroic parent?
You know, Brad, as you were talking about the heroic parent, I just want to commend you on the work that you do. You know, like I say, being involved in field for over 30 years and working along with Alan, it's just interesting that the things that we have the opportunity to see, and, you know, at the end of the day, is being a helpful agent, you know, to parents and the adolescents that we actually get a chance to escort to programs. And I think I take pride in what we do, because having the opportunity to, I call it short-term intervention counseling, really trying to help the teen in that short time that we have them and be able to hand them off to programs like yourself to be able to continue that great works. But at the end of the day, I see it very holistic, because, you know, there's parents. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts. And I want to come back to say this. You started down this line of codependency. And that I see sometimes as a major, you know, you're talking about the parent feeling good and almost having kids feel guilty for their own feeling. And codependency is such a strong agent. I mean, maybe you can expound on that just a little bit, if you don't mind.
Yeah, you know, I was giving a lecture just recently, and somebody asked me about parents, and I was talking about this assumption that parents that send children to programs like ours just want to get rid of them, you know, go fix them.
Right.
And of course, I was saying that it's usually quite the opposite. It's being over connected to being over identified with them, and to feeling what the child feels, and to really, and the book talks about this a lot, really evaluating oneself as a parent by how a child reacts emotionally, what they say, whether they're successful or not. And really, those things aren't ours. Ours are ours. Our things are ours. Ours aren't how they choose and how they react. So this codependency is this co-participation, and this idea that, again, back and forth, that if a child responds poorly, then I did something wrong. That's not true. If a child does something well, then I did something right.
Right.
You did something right if you did something right. Somebody congratulated me some time ago on some success that my son was having, and I said, I didn't do it.
Right.
I did. In fact, it was up to me. He probably wouldn't be where he's at right now. So I think it's, and this is important. This is an important point of the book. Over-identification with our children is the worst form of attachment, because in over-identification, there's not two people present. There's one person, and then there's a mirror reflecting back, telling me who I am. So this idea we have that these helicopter parents or these snowplow parents are expressing too much love, it's their own childhood wound that tells them that they're not a complete person, that doesn't allow them to look at their child and see their child and then find a source of self-evaluation somewhere else in their life, or to carry around an internal copy that gives them that strength to be able to see their child clearly. So codependency is deep, rich, and broad. It affects most everything that we all do, and it's something that if we don't treat, then maintaining the great gains that happen in all of our programs is going to be a challenge for everybody.
So, good point. So let me maybe dissect just a portion of that I think is good for the listeners, the helicopter parents, or that the childhood issues of a parent affecting their outlook on their own kids.
Right.
I think, wow, that's powerful. That's powerful, because I think a lot of the work that we do, we see that projection. And even as a parent myself, I have to be very careful that I still got to let my kids be themselves and not project my own issues, that whatever it was as a child that I'm projecting forward.
Yeah. And Brad, you know, you brought up a really good point when you brought up where someone else is saying, oh, you know, they're just getting rid of their kids. You know, they're just sending them away. But the thing that we run into, you know, as the people that are bringing them to the program, is when the child believes that, when the child says,
yes.
Oh, well, you know, you don't understand. My parents are just getting rid of me, you know, or, you know, they're just dumping me somewhere. And our response is usually something along the lines of, or they'll say something like, you know, I'm going to hate them for life over this because they've just dumped me, and go, you know, I understand your frustration with the deed, but please understand that the action was made out of love. The parent is making this action maybe because of the fact that they feel that they have been deficient in some area, and this is their way of showing love by bringing in professionals that they feel can help you. And it sort of diffuses it, because we're separating the fact of, okay, you want to hate the deed, that's fine, but understand that it still came out of love. And usually when they can grasp that, and not that they do immediately, but when they can grasp that, I think that it puts them in a better state now once you get them and you're now working with them within the program.
Absolutely. Alice Miller, she's perhaps one of the greatest authors that has written a book about child development that I've ever read, and a lot of my colleagues believe that too. It's called Drama of the Gifted Child. She says this idea that a parent can't provide for his or her child if they aren't able to provide everything for them, if they allow someone else to do that for them. And that's really what's happening in these cases. It's outside of control. It's too chaotic. It's dangerous. I'm overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. And for these parents, and you know this, it's so hard to hand them over.
Yes. Yes. So true.
Mm-hmm. So now, Brad, let me ask you, I mean, you know, what would you say is the most important things that you've learned working with families, you know, that are struggling with addiction and mental health, you know, having done this now for so many years?
You know, there's a couple of things that I notice. I think it's this idea that shame and guilt are somehow aligned with our idea of conscious. And a lot of times, the great author Harriet Lerner says that in order to do the right thing, we have to feel guilt a lot of the time. And so we've come to believe that guilt means that we've done something wrong. And I think if all of us are honest with ourselves, we can understand there's a lot of times we feel bad about something, even though in our head we might know that it's the right thing to do for ourselves and for the other. So the corrosive effect of guilt and shame on parents, and on the effect of their children in parenting as they pay attention to those and don't do some of that work and uncover some of that. I think seeing a child, like really seeing a child, is the greatest gift that we can give to our parents. And that's we facilitate that through communication skills training and listening to children, really listening to children and taking a step back before you respond. But really it's about learning to see learning to see past the problem that they're trying to become, learning to see past the symptoms, because the symptoms are meant to distract them and us from the wound that is beneath them. So learning to see our children. And then I think the idea that I teach parenting skills, of course, but the most important thing for me that I've learned is it's how we think about our children that is going to have the biggest impact on them. And so a skill can change a parent. It can change a parent's way of thinking, but a skill doesn't do it. The thing that does it is how we regard our children. And if we regard them with judgment or a lot of anger, then it's no skill is going to hide that. And if we regard them with love and acceptance and non-judgment, and still there's this nurturing piece that we do around guidance and boundaries, but if we think about them without the judgment, then it's hard to do wrong by them. So I think it's this idea that the skill doesn't teach it, skill doesn't change the child, the skill changes the parent. And mm-hmm. that change can have a wonderful impact on children that they're raising. So those are the things that come to mind as the things that I've learned from parents and families over the years that I've been doing this.
Yeah, that's interesting. I kind of listening to what you just shared and what kind of resonates in my mind is it's kind of standing out, as you said, that skill base, you know, and skills reminds me of having the tools necessary and be able to reach into your toolbox of resources of parenting and being able to use the right tool at the right time that will give you these outcomes.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and I've become an expert at weaponizing tools. if you listen to my wife and I have a nice discussion some evening, you'll hear perfectly executed communication skills, and you'll hear a vibe between us that, you know, that there's where the real problem lies. And so skills are important, but that foundation of love,
yes,
acceptance, and non-judgment is the foundation.
The foundation. So the tools without a foundation, really, what are we working with is what I'm hearing.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. Now, and speaking of tools, we have another email message that came in. And again, we thank those that take the time to send these in. This one reads, I've been a family therapist for many years. I am always seeking new tools and new material to help families push through the difficult times of their teens. I bought Brad's book last week after reading the reviews on the Answers for the Family in Simon & Schuster. Engaging and an easy read for parents. It has authentic approaches and powerful tools that I believe will help parents push past the drama. It is now on my top 10 must-read list for clients. Wow, that was nice.
That was nice.
Well, that's good. Keep
yes.
reading those.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, yeah. If you got any more of those, send them in now.
Yes. Hey, well, I like, too, you know, even from this listener, how... You know, I like to dissect stuff, but we're just talking about skills and then those tools in the toolbox. And as it says here, authentic approaches and powerful tools. And I think, Brad, that what you had just shared about, you know, having the foundation, that authenticity, that love, that approach, and then having the tools, which gives you the skills to masterly, you know, work through the process. And as you just said, weaponize those tools.
Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a lot of parents over the years. We get some small tools and skills for parents to practice with their children in letters and on phone calls and during visits. And I've had a lot of parents stumble across those as they're first introduced to them. Like any tool, think of sport. When you first get introduced to it, it's awkward. It doesn't feel
yes.
natural. And my first thought is, that's okay. It interrupts your old mind, your old
right.
brain, your old language. So great that it feels uncomfortable. It will cause you to become more conscious, and you'll practice it, and eventually it'll become a part of you. And then the next piece is, parents will say to me, I've had presidents of universities, you know, coaches of major sports teams saying, it's changed my relationship with everybody, not just with my child, because now I'm much more, what I say is much more aligned and authentic with who I am and what I feel and what my values are. And so tools challenge us to think differently, to feel differently, to conceive of ourselves and our relationship with our child's problems differently. So they can be wonderful. And as long as we don't think of a tool as a tool to change somebody else,
right.
I think we're on safe ground. But if we think, I have a magic, you know, that's what they're always asking us. Give me the tool, give me the button that's going to make my child do X, Y, or Z. And then we have to pause and go back to a different question.
Right.
Well, Brad, I think for those people that are listening to this show, they know that one of the things that I like best are success stories. I was going over this, you know, the questions and stuff on this at the gym yesterday, and one of the people came up to me, and that's one of the things they asked. They said, oh, you know, who's going to be on the show?
Whoa. I got to stop us right here.
What?
You at the gym?
I'm at the gym almost every day. And
really?
Yeah.
Well, really, Alan?
Oh, here we go.
Really, Alan? Come on.
You know, and you know, I was being real nice.
If you're
going nice.
To be the session, I can help you out here.
Yeah, exactly. You know what? Yeah, exactly.
Okay, we got the right person. Exactly. Brad, will you please help us? Because this 30 years. This 30 years between us is just, I don't know.
And Brad, I got to tell you, I showed restraint when he told the story about what his mom told him about growing up. I showed restraint because there was a wide opening of going, so when is that going to happen? But, you know, I left it alone, you know?
Okay.
Until
see,
now.
You
until
see,
now.
Alan? You,
until
you see, Brad?
Now.
Okay.
That's
all right. Okay. You better be, you're glad there's space between us. There's tables and, okay. All right.
So.
At the gym.
Yes. But anyway, you know. Going into the thing about success stories, and one of the people that spoke to me said, one of my favorite parts when I listen to the show is the success stories, because in each situation, they always feel like, you know, that could be me. So if you could, you know, share some of the success stories, you know, that for the parents that are listening, that they could envision this and think, you know, that could be me, or that could be my family or my child or something. So if you could share a couple, it would be great.
You know, I think the one, and this might be strange, but the one that I could tell you the most about that stands out is my son.
Yes.
My son, I sent my son to our program when he was 13. And he wasn't out of control or completely off the rails, but he was struggling, and he lacked an ability to feel and to communicate his emotions and to deal with them. And so I sent him after an incident. And it didn't fix him. It didn't magically change everything, but it built a bridge between us. It created a common language. Yes. I learned in my own visit out to the field, I learned that I talk too much and I don't listen enough, and that he had eventually gotten to the point where he thought, well, every time I talk about something with Dad, I'm going to lose. Like he said, the analogy he uses, if I play one-on-one with Kobe Bryant, I'm going to lose every time, so why try?
Why try?
He had begun to isolate and withdraw.
That's a good point.
Then the symptoms started to appear. So it changed our relationship. And it was good before, but it changed it and improved it. And after he came home from the program, it wasn't like we didn't have any problems, but we had a common language. We had a connection. And I became more of a student of my own parenting after that process, after that tearful session out in the field talking about those things and seeing what I had inadvertently done to him. So, you know, when he went off to college, he wrote me this wonderful letter that's in the book, an excerpt of it is in the book, where he said, I couldn't imagine going off to college without this relationship. And,
wow.
You know, thank you for everything. And I didn't do it so that he would say thank you. I did it because I had to. I did it because it was the right thing to do, because it's what life was asking me to do. And he was in some crisis. And so the outcome, of course, became beautiful. And there are outcomes that are more trying. I had a parent say to me, or excuse me, an educational consultant say to me, the people who rave most about your programs aren't all the ones with the best outcomes in terms of their child changing, but they have clarity, they have peace, they have hope, they have optimism, they have tools, and they'll recommend it over and over again to everybody because it's changed their life. So, you know, it's hard to say the outcomes. In the book, it talks about where does the hope come from, and the hope comes from this process.
Right.
The hope doesn't come from a prediction of a certain outcome. It comes from the process, the journey, the path that we get on. So in my case, it worked out wonderfully on both ends, but I had to let go. It's like throwing a baseball. If you're pitching a baseball, if you aim it too much, what happens? You lose control, you lose power.
You miss the target.
A jump shot. So
right.
You learn to let go of the outcome, and you learn to practice the things that change you in the process, and the outcomes often follow.
That is so true and so powerful. And I, what I hear you saying, and which I think about the humility behind it as well, is being able to, as you talk about a story, looking at yourself. You just shared something, a success story, and basically what I just heard you share was this process and going through it and what it did for you. I mean, as a parent, and the outcome was, it was great for your son. But through this is that as a parent, you grew. And I think that is when someone can see it, it's not about I'm going to fix, you know, and it's what we do, Brad, and you know, and you've been in the business for years. These parents come in as I'm not the problem. Don't try to fix me. It's the kid. And a lot of times, we, you know, if we're being authentic and real, and we can, and that's what you do is being able to, when you get kids in, parents a lot of times think it's about the kid, but then when you get a chance to work with the parents, it's a window of opening for them to see themselves, especially when you get a chance to use yourself as an example.
Yeah.
So I think that's very powerful.
I think that if parents can be on a path, their path, and I think it makes all the difference in the world. And that is so, it feels so safe for a child. It feels more courageous to a child than anything if you can walk in and say, you know, your child has a problem with peer pressure. They don't need a lecture about peer pressure. What would benefit them is talk about how you're still struggling with peer pressure by the car that you buy, by the clothes that you wear.
Yes.
And just, if you share that with them, guess what happens? Your child starts giving you a lecture about peer pressure. So
right.
This idea that we have to be bulletproof and inauthentic, really, and this idea that we have to have all the answers, someone who has all the answers is hard to talk to.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to feel safe around somebody who's got it all figured out, because I'm over here, you guys are over there still bumbling around, and let's all just be human together. And that's what the child needs from the parent, is they need a human connection. But they don't need somebody who's got all the answers and is bulletproof and has all of the decisions right in their life.
So, Brad, when you were talking about your 13-year-old son, and I got this vision, and so my question is to see if you were presented with this same statement, and that is that when you would start to talk to them, at least for me, the feedback that I would get sometimes was, "Oh my God, Dad, do you have to turn everything into a learning experience?" You know, you know. And when you mentioned about, for those of us that maybe are working with at-risk youth, or we're working with families, that sometimes I think we have to be careful that when we're sitting down, we're talking with our own kids, and something happens, and then, you know, and that was kind of a wake-up call for me, which was, you know, do you have to turn everything into a learning experience? Can't we just let this go? You know, so is that one of the things that you kind of found in with your situation with your own son?
Yeah, you know, a very short but simple story. This is, you know, as he's going to college, and he had a scholarship at this point, he interviewed at a job. He's an artist, and he interviewed at a job, and he lied to them. He came to tell me. He said, "I lied to them about when I would be going to school, because they wouldn't give me the job, because it's, you know, I'm going in August to school, but they wanted me until at least January." And I looked at him, and I said, "Tell me how that goes." And 3 or 4 days later, he came back to me, and he said, I went in, and I told him the truth, and I said, "Why'd you do that?" He said, my friend Josh said I was an idiot, and I said, in my head, I'm thinking, he's right. Welcome to the club. And then I said, "What did they do?" And he said, "They didn't give me the job." And I said, "How do you feel?" And he's like, "Better." So yes, I could sit there and teach all day long. Mm-hmm. But what's more important than teaching is listening and being there and providing some safety and a net for your children, but letting them bumble through it like you bumbled through it and I bumbled through it to get to what the little that we know right now. And so there is an anxiety. There's a need to control, to protect from pain and discomfort, to protect children from a lot of the valuable aspects of the lessons that come along from walking into a wall, because there's only one way to find out what it feels like to walk into a wall.
Wow.
And we got to let our children do that sometimes.
Yes. Yes, we do. I have another question. I'm going to couple that with a scenario. You know, what are some of the most common mistakes you see parents making? And I couple that with this. There was a situation in my life, use an example. And my youngest daughter, who's just turned 21, she thinks she's grown. You know, I don't know what shit 20. I'm grown, Dad. I was like, okay, you live at home, you don't pay bills. Really? Oh, but that's a whole other story. But anyway, a scenario came up, and she did something that was really inappropriate. And she basically was communicating with her mother, and she emailed her mom. I guess she didn't want it verbally, but she was sharing. And she was, I don't know, she was hoping to get a response, and I'm watching the scenario, and my wife acted maybe out of fear. I don't know, but the outcome was kind of ugly. Mm-hmm. You know, so going back to some of the most common mistakes parents make.
You know, I would say that the number one on the surface is control, is to believe that they can control their children, believe that it's up to them. You know, you have families, you guys have worked with these families where they have two children successful in, by many definitions of that word, and then one child who's off track. And so they start to ask the question, so what did I do? How did I fail this one? And those aren't the right questions. Again, that's not about you. So the idea that we can control another human being, even a child, at a fundamental level is the core disease, if you will, of codependent parenting, the core symptom of codependent parenting. And so the biggest mistake that I see parents make is they don't do their own work. They do work for fixing the child. They ask questions, and I remind them to go to meetings, to go to therapy, to ask themselves questions. And they do this because of guilt and shame that they were raised with and by. They didn't know it. It wasn't said that way, but I'm responsible for other people's choices. I'm responsible for the success or failure of my children. And, of course, the answer is, and it goes back to the children who say they're going to hate their parents, I'm responsible for my intention, my self-honesty, my practice of skills. You know, I could go down the list of 100 things that any employee would be responsible for, or anybody in any role would be responsible for. But
right.
What I'm not responsible for is getting my boss to give me a raise or having my child get into Harvard. That's not my job. My job is to be the best parent that I can be. And the reward of good parenting is better living. It's not well-behaved children. And that's the mistake that I think we make in this culture because of our own histories.
Good, good, Brett. That was good stuff.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, we're out of time. I just glanced over, and the time has flown by. Oh, but again, for anybody out there, if you have additional questions, if you want to get a hold of Brad, you can go to any one of a couple of websites. You can go to www.snwp.com, or you can go to evoketherapyprograms.com. If you're driving, if you can't write this down, go to Answers, the numeral for the family. Go to our site. We will have all of Brad's information on there. Brad, thank you so much for coming on, and we look forward to the new book. And thank you for all of the good works.
And Brad, this is Marvin. I'm looking forward to the next time I'm at Second Nature, so I'm gonna have to look you up while I'm there so I can. You know, I've been out in the field for a long time. Probably already know you, but just, you know, got to reattach the face. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing you again.
Thanks for having me, guys. It was really fun today. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you.
And for everybody out there, be with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Marvin Smith. Right here on LA Talk Radio.